It's the Tiltcast, episode 589.
It's a blast.
And this week, guys, we talk a lot of games. We talk Cyberpunk 2077, Phantom Liberty. We talk MechWarrior 5, Shinigami Tensei, 7 Days to Die, and Rusty delving back into Final Fantasy 14 Online. Stay tuned.
I'm a nerd.
Don't fill up the poop chute.
Oh, God.
It is the Tiltcast. It is Saturday, July 13th at a balmy 10:48 p.m.
Okay.
It's an M-rated show.
10:48, huh?
Yeah. It's 11:48 your time in the Northlands.
Super balmy.
It is going to be 96 here today. It already feels like it's 92 outside.
78 degrees and way too hot for the Northerners. So.
I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
Rusty.
And with the three of us, you're going to get about 30 minutes of bullshit.
Oh, shit.
Some games, some news. Holy shit, I'm not quite here yet. I don't think Rusty is either.
Nope.
We've got a busy weekend. Our recording plans for tomorrow had to be changed, and so we hustled to get on the pod.
We did. Indeed. Mostly because my plans changed last minute last night.
Yeah. And we adapted. And,
when your plans change, our plans change, you know?
Yeah, I got a photo gig tonight. A pay photo gig for 7 bands. And I have to leave here at 4:45.
Nice.
Damn.
So, yeah. It is going to be a busy-ass day. I don't know if your neighbors do this, Jason, but do they kind of shame you into mowing?
A little bit.
That's what's happening right now. Like, my neighbor to my right and my left and across the street are all mowing right now. That's what I would be doing right now, but, you know, recording a podcast, but I don't fucking care, to be honest with you. I've been avoiding it. It is so hot outside. It's hot now, man. I don't even want to mow right now.
Yeah, no, it is. And I'm going to be at a campsite on a lake all week starting tomorrow.
That's
just going to get hotter.
Oh, you are an idiot. You know, tomorrow the high is, so today the high is 96. Tomorrow it's 99. Monday it's 101. Tuesday it's 100. And then you got rain on Wednesday, possibly.
Try 102.
Okay, well, I'm just talking about here because I live a little further away than you do.
Yeah.
But all y'all are crazy.
Hey, this was not my thing. This was my wife and her family.
They wanted to camp. I don't understand camping in fucking July, bro. Like,
not around here or not around there. Especially.
This is like, okay, when are you going to camp in August too?
For all these families, it's about their kids are out of school. They can be out on the lakes and in the water. You know, boating and jet skiing and doing all that stuff.
You know.
That's what it is. But you're not into the boating or the jet skiing.
Well, no, but I'm also not into melting my face in freaking heat either, so.
I will probably spend the majority of the week inside the camper with the AC running full blast.
And how is that camping?
It's survival.
Well, yeah, of course it's going to be considered survival, you know, but that's not what I would consider camping. That is, well, glamping.
Where,
for a better term. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't tell me your entire family's up at the lake without campers, sir.
Well, no, they're up RVs. At the lake. They've got their campers, and it's a thing, but they're never in it. Like, they only ever enter the camper to use the refrigerator, use the restroom, or sleep.
There are only two reasons why I will leave that camper this week, this next week. To grill something, which I'll be doing under protest, but I will at least have a mister, a fan, and a canopy over my head, because sun and heat do not mix with me. Or I will be in the water. That's it. Well, and then, you know, to go use the camp bathrooms, because I hate filling up filling up the poop chute on the camper. Just because no matter what you do, eventually it'll start to smell when you're out there for a week solid.
There's no way you could get me to camp in
campers heat. Perfect.
I mean, for me, like if at night it's going to be below 60 something, sure, I'll camp. And during the day it doesn't get over 80 something, sure, I'll camp. I already put in my hours for survival as a Boy Scout 20 plus years ago. I'm good.
At least the nights are going to be down in the mid to upper 70s. So at least once the sun goes down, I will probably be outside the camper. But
yeah,
while the sun's up, if I'm not in the water, I'm either operating the grill for a few minutes to flash cook whatever meat we're cooking, or I'm inside the camper while the sun's up.
Yeah, this summer I have a good relationship with a band that's playing a lot of summer festivals. So that's where they make their money, right? And they're asking me if I wanted to go. Well, there's two things for me to consider. A, Lola. I can't leave Lola for weeks on end, and my, you know, vacation and all that. And B, they're doing it to make money, so they're not getting hotel rooms. They're fucking camping at all of these things. I'm not camping during the summer all over the U.S. No thank you. For days on end, no thank you. I have done summer music festivals in my early 20s and never again. Not without a hotel. It's so hot. I remember there was one time I was at a... Oh, I can't remember what it was. What was the one that was sponsored by Vans a long time ago? Lollapalooza?
Oh, yeah.
I want to say it was Lollapalooza. This is years and years and years ago. And I remember I got so hot, I just went in my car and turned on the AC and fell asleep, and then I ran out of gas. And then woke up to a dead battery and no gas. I was just hot. Like, it's freaking 100 degrees at night. I'm just like, oh, I'm dying. And then I had to get a jump, and then I had to get somebody to take me to a Walmart to get a gas can to fill up enough gas to take my car into town to get gas. It's such a bad experience. I know last year, Jason, we went to Rocklahoma. That was a fun experience. There were some bands there that I wanted to see. I had fun with you guys. Holy shit, that was hot. Holy shit, that was a hot festival. I've never been that drenched in sweat in a really long time. Like, I went through gallons of water. Like, thank God they had water on hand anywhere. But I want to say I also bought Gatorade. I probably spent $50 in Gatorade in a day. It's so hot, and I don't even understand people drinking. Like, getting dehydrated and drunk is just like the worst hangover ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see how people just continually drink beer that whole time. But there are people that do. People older than me.
Jason, you got to rock up on that mic. I can barely hear you.
Yeah. I said.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Let me check something. Because I'm not any further from it.
You got a little louder.
Oh my God. Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
There we go.
Yeah, apparently the mic software didn't start right.
Excuses. Yeah,
no, there were people out there drinking beer all freaking weekend long, like continuously. People older than me. I don't see how they did it. Now, granted, I have a little bit of a handicap. I've had heat stroke several times, so there was no way I was drinking beer while I was out there, at least before the sun went down.
Yeah, negative. I just can't bring myself to, like, torture myself that way anymore.
Yeah, I don't see it as fun. You know what's really fun? Playing video games in the summer in your air-conditioned house or apartment. Yeah. That's what's fun.
Fuck yeah, dude. It's like, you know, it's sweating balls outside. I'm in the lowest part of the building. AC's running, and I'm talking to you fools. So.
Yeah, it's yep,
I'm perfectly comfortable at the moment.
Yeah, just remember this: perfectly comfortable when you're out there fucking sweating balls, dude.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, I'm going to. Now, my one plus is I do have to come back into town tonight because I've got a doctor's appointment first thing Monday morning that was already scheduled before any of this was settled on.
So you're going to sleep in your bed?
Yeah. But then after that, it's all
sweat balls.
You don't turn on the AC except for night, do you?
Huh?
Do you turn on the air conditioner in the RV throughout the day or no?
Yes.
Throughout the day, you got to. Otherwise, the AC won't be able to keep up.
Yeah, even if you're setting it up to like 76, 78, you still have to run it all day long. Otherwise, it can't keep up and cool it back off at night.
Does it have, so is your RV a trailer?
Yes.
You got electric plug in at the campsite, don't you?
Yep.
Gotcha. So if you didn't, though, does it run off your truck or what?
No.
No, it just doesn't run.
Like, at Rocklahoma, there was no electric hookup, so I ran a generator that whole weekend.
Oh. That sucked. But,
yeah, but I that's mean, honestly, like, not that much gas either. Like, what, does it have a 5-gallon tank or something?
Yeah, basically.
And that'll run you all day?
I went through 20 gallons of gas.
In a weekend?
Yeah.
That's some expensive electricity.
Yeah.
Well, it was also extremely hot that weekend. Like, it was over 100 degrees.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, it's...
So both the generator and the camper were running hot. Like, that weekend was ridiculous. I don't remember it being that hot on Labor Day weekend in a while.
Yeah, I'm not going this year. It's there wasn't anything I wanted to see, but not really anyway. That could justify the $200 ticket price.
Yeah, it's more about the fact that the cost of the gas is a lot less than the cost of heat stroke.
Yeah, that's true. I get it. But, you know, if your AC was out, or if your power was out for a week, like how expensive that would be to run your generator all week.
Yeah, true. But yeah, we're cool now. We're playing video games and we've had a little bit of time to actually like chew through some shit.
Yes, we have.
So, cause it's
yeah, it's we been, we did you know, we took off for the 4th, right? I did the things. Jason did the things. I want to say the highlight of my weekend, besides the gaming, was and not having any responsibility last weekend, was the signal cannon that my cousin brought. It's 3.5 ounces of Pyrodex, which is, you know, basically the same stuff you put in a black powder rifle, packed down with some wadding. You light a fuse, and it hits so hard. So, like, I recorded the sound and sent it to you guys. But, you know, it clips out on my microphone on my phone. But
wow,
it's so loud, it punches you in the chest and, like, almost knocks your breath out. Like, it's so loud. But yeah, we did the signal cannon, and the first time when he shot it off, you know, he didn't warn anybody. You could see, like, one of the neighbors, like, fell over. Like, my mom's neighbors are about an acre apart, right? So, like, but they're still visible, right? And then after that, he started yelling fire in the hole, and you could see everybody, like, putting their hands over their ears. But yeah, it's like, you definitely feel it in the ground, right? You can feel the boom in the ground, and then it just hits you in the chest. It's just this little cannon that's, like, maybe a foot tall. You pack full of gunpowder. It's got a little hand. It looks like a huge beer stein. And, yeah, you light that sucker. You put a really long fuse on it, and then, like, holy shit, it's loud. It's fun, though. I think we shot about 4 or 5 times. But, yeah, I recorded the audio of it because I didn't have a way of holding my phone and covering my ears at the same time. I did not want to have ear damage.
Ruptured eardrums?
Yeah, it's that loud.
Yay.
Signal cannons are a blast, though.
Literally, it's a blast.
Oh, my God.
Dad jokes. Jason, you've had 2 weeks. I'm sure you've played something, right?
Oh, yeah. I've been replaying through Cyberpunk 2077 to finally get to playing Phantom Liberty, which I just started yesterday. So
yeah, it takes to, like, what, about 25 hours in or so?
Yeah, it's you can't initiate it until
you get to the Voodoo Boys.
You start interacting with the Voodoo Boys in Pacifica. So yeah,
it's a pretty good DLC.
It is. It's a surprisingly good DLC, at least so far. I've not finished it yet.
I liked it. It goes places, and it's a pretty meaty chunk of the game, honestly. Like, it expands the game by about a third. It's an expansion, like, and it's for a pretty good game. I was I think we rated it pretty highly last year, didn't we, Rusty?
That would be you. I never actually got there.
Oh, did you never play it?
No, I started playing Cyberpunk again, or started to do it again, and then I ended up playing something else, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a play.
I'm gonna definitely do it. So this year is my upgrade year for computers.
Because you have to get something better than a 3090.
Well, yes. Well, the 5000 series, the 5000 series are coming is coming out, and I absolutely want to get a newer processor. Because the 9900K is a workhorse, and it's doing a fantastic job. It's just, I want to experiment with some of the newer Intel chips, and there's a new socket coming out this year, so I'm going to go ahead and upgrade socket and GPU and upgrade to DDR5 RAM. Once I do that, it'll be time to, you know, to revisit things that started to, you know, push the, you know, my current rig. And if you turn Cyberpunk basically all the way up to beautiful, it starts to push shit. So I kind of want to use Cyberpunk as the can it run crisis, you know?
It is definitely still that, just because of how much procedural generation there is in the world.
Yeah. I'd just be able to, you know, turn it all the way up and see, how the new graphics card, new processor, and RAM actually handle that kind of load. But yeah, that's kind of the plan. So I'm pushing playing Cyberpunk off until probably later in this year. The upgrade's probably not going to happen, provided that I can actually get a video card, because, you know, the shortages and all that shit. But it'll be probably October, November before I actually get there. I've got plenty of other games to keep me busy between, you know, now and then. So, but I do own Phantom Liberty. I just never actually got around to playing it.
Right on. Yeah, Jason, I think you'll like Phantom Liberty. I really had a lot of fun with that. It's really good.
I gotta say, I've been really been enjoying the playback through on everything. It's, I don't know. You know, you still, even if you somewhat know what's going to happen, the story is just so good, like the little bits of it, but the moment to moment things are still so good that it's still really enjoyable to play back through, even when you know what's going to happen.
Well, what I found when I first booted up the game and played like maybe the first, 2 hours or so, the game feels brand new. Like if you'd played it on the 1.0 release, when it was first released, if you struggled through it, the talent system, the skill point system is completely different. Shit's not in the same spots, It makes more sense the way that they've got it set up now, but you can't just go off of what you remember from your previous playthrough, and know where shit is, and it's you kind of rediscover it.
Yeah, and it doesn't do skill points per se. I mean, it does, but like the more meaningful upgrades are the cybernetic implants.
Right.
And that's been really reworked. So like as you're building your build, I beat it on hard on the last playthrough. It was a challenge. I can't remember what the build was. I want to say it was some kind of SMG build I was doing for crit. But anyways, like it was a non-sneaky build. It was a just fuck around and find out kind of build. But I remember having a lot of fun with the new upgrades and everything. It felt really fresh with everything they redid to it.
Yeah, that's one of the takeaways I took from my short time with it this year. But so kind of excited to actually go through and do that kind of that kind of revisit to old games, and that is more of a like a downtime, style thing. And I'm not sure if there's, very much coming up that I'm super looking forward to.
Did anybody get any Steam sales?
I did.
What'd you buy?
I bought Sekiro.
That's a vastly different game than everything else they've done.
Wow, you really just want to bang your head against the wall?
I bought Sekiro, played about an hour of it, and decided that I can't play Sekiro immediately after playing Dark Souls games.
I don't want to say I hit a wall, but I've been playing Souls games since April, right? Mm-hmm. After my dad passed, I was like, I'm going to play things that made me have fun. So I played Souls, right? Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 2, Dark Souls 3, Elden Ring. I've got essentially the same stuff to do that I did last time that we podcasted, because I finally just put down Elden Ring. I'm in Shadow of the Erdtree. I did beat who's the boss that's on the war pig?
The commander dude.
Commander Garms, or I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyways, I beat him, put him in his place, had to get incredibly aggressive with him to beat him. That was probably one of the harder fights I've done. Like, nothing so far has been, like, insurmountable. I know there's a lot of people. I know that I've heard a lot about the last boss, like, being controller smashing hard. And eventually I'll get to that. But I wanted to shift focus because for 90 days I'd been playing Souls games. And I was like, well, Rusty just beat it and reviewed it and liked it. I'm going to play something else. And so I did. I did get Steam Cell stuff. I got MechWarrior 5 again, but instead of being on Epic, I wanted it on Steam because reasons, I guess. It was cheap. Like, I bought everything that I had on the Epic store for $30, like all the DLCs that they've released for it and everything. And I wanted to mod it. And so I got a mod called YAML. I can't remember what it stands for, YAML. And it expands a lot of stuff in your mech bay. So you can add different. It's very much like Rogue Tech. Jason, do you remember Rogue Tech?
Yep. I love Rogue Tech and BTA 3062.
Yeah, and I was trying to decide if I wanted to do turn-based or more action-based, and I was like, I'm going to do more action-based. I'm going to try out this mod. It was very easy to install. I used Vortex. Vortex is a less customizable installer, but, like, holy shit, I just found a collection that included, like, you literally just browse collections, right? People have pieced together mods that work together, and there was one that was, like, a light version that included YAML. Click the button, and 10 minutes later, everything works. You go through and you enable all the plugins, and it's ready to go. And it doesn't erase any kind of achievement. So, didn't do the campaign. I did the story campaign mode, and I've been playing that a little bit off and on. I think I've probably put 15 or 20 hours in it, and I'm already at, got some medium and some assault mechs. Still looking for an Orion to kit out. I really like the Orion for some reason, but I got a Highlander already, which is crazy this early into the game. But yeah, like, you can add, like, ferrofibrous armor, right? Which will reduce the weight of your armor, but let you have more armor, essentially. And you can do things where you can add, like, engine extensions where if you install it, it'll reduce your engine weight. But so, like, for example, I got a mech. I want to say it's a, what is it? Maybe it's a Wolverine. I don't know. We'll just use that as an example, right? So I got it for a Wolverine. It takes up slots on my side bays. So, but I can be cored now by if somebody shoots off my side bay. So I installed armor patches on it. Armor patches will let me add armor to a spot, right? As long as I have the tonnage. So you add a half ton armor patch on each side. And now I can up my armor by, like, another 25. So now, like, the front of those mechs are, like, super armored. They've got these guns called rapid fire guns. So, like, you can get an AC-5 burst fire, which is okay. I don't like it that much. Or an AC-5 rapid fire, which is almost as fast as you can click the trigger. And an AC-5 rapid fire is actually really good. So is an AC-10 rapid fire. And then I've got a hunchback with an AC-20 rapid fire, which just chews through shit. Like, all I did is like, this doesn't need lasers. It needs one really big gun. It's got 300 rounds of AC-20 ammo and an AC-20 rapid fire. And it just demolishes shit. It's just a slow-ass hunchback with a rapid-firing gun that can chew through things in like two or three hits.
It's a bipedal tank machine gun.
Yeah, it's insane. It generates a fuckload of heat. Can, like, with that mod, it's got also different view modes. So you've got, like, heat vision, you've got night vision, you've got thermal like a grayscale version of it to kind of, like, break up a lot of the darker maps. I've got a mod that it's included with that enhances all the weather effects. It still runs like shit with ray tracing, even on my 4090. So I turn that off, right? Because I want 120 FPS while I'm playing that game. And you almost can't tell a damn bit of difference. So, like, it's not worth taking a performance hit at dropping me at my 4090 anywhere from 20 to 45 frames per second at 4K. Like, that's stupid. I'd rather just run at native resolution and with whatever it's got, and it looks a lot better. But, yeah, you've got something, too. Like, you can dump your coolant. So there's a one-time thing. Let's say you're just like super hot, right? And you're in the middle of battle and you just got to like alpha strike two or three things. You can hit your 9 key. It dumps all your coolant, which instantly resets all your heat levels. But then for the rest of the mission, you take 10%, you use 10% more heat, which is an interesting mechanic. So like, I'm fucked. I've got, you know, 3 mechs at me. I got to like alpha strike legs or heads as fast as possible, hit my coolant thing, and then like alpha strike out. And then for the rest of the mission, I'm going to kind of hang back. It also does a thing where if your main mech is destroyed, instead of it resetting the mission, it just teleports your pilot to another mech. So you can already switch between mechs, but it'll teleport your guy to another mech. So you don't instantly get a game over when your main mech dies. It has a whole skill point system that you goes through where you can upgrade different things about your ship, kind of like Battletech, right? So it kind of sets your progression to where you can't immediately use the heavier mechs. You have to upgrade each mech bay to hold more weight, and you get those points by doing the Cantina missions. And as you go further up in the Cantina missions, they award more points. And of course, that means you can dump those points into upgrades in your bays. And like, there's upgrades for how long it takes you to travel somewhere, or how much time it takes something to be repaired, or how much something costs to be repaired, how long somebody stays in med bay, etc. It also has a thing where you can essentially get any mech with any engine, as provided it can carry the weight of the engine. So I sent Jason a video, or I sent the team a video of me in an urban mech. So my urban mech, so all the mechs have quirks now with this, right? So the urban mech actually automatically gets more armor. It has as much armor as a really heavy medium mech. It's got a supercharger on it, which is crazy. It's got an engine. So my native speed on my urban mech, instead of being 32, is 56. I've got like 3 of these. I've got an urban mech right now with an AC-20 on it, which is crazy. But it's got jump jets, a supercharger, a PPC, and 4 small lasers. And because of its small profile and the ability to rotate all the way around, I engage everything and grab aggro with one of my teammates, and I hop around the back, like use my supercharger to get behind mechs, and I backstab with that. So like, I might have a mission where I'm kind of put myself in a space where I've got enough space for like 3 mediums and a light. Well, I pilot the light mech, and it's an urban mech of all things. And that urban mech is badass. And so it's just funny watching it, like an urban mech, which is usually the walking trash can, the bullshit. It's the Dalek, right? The Dalek mech of the MechWarrior universe usually sucks ass. In this case, like, you can kit out an urban mech and make it actually pretty badass, which is awesome. And so all those customization options that YAML adds is super cool. And if you're looking to get into just, you know, basically mech garage, that's what I'm doing with that. And
sweet. And YAML is yet another mech lab.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it just adds a fuck ton more options to what you can do with stuff. It makes the vanilla games mech lab seem so basic after you install that, because there's so many different armor options, so many different engine options, right? And adds weapon options, right? Like having the rapid fire gun, like AC-5 kind of sucks on its own, to be honest with you. Like, it's decent point damage, but it takes like 2 seconds to reload. So like, it's like boom, boom, right? Like,
right.
Or in that same time frame, I could have fired 4 or 5 shots. And that instantly makes an AC-5 actually good, because now I can like leg stuff really fast with it. Like, I can sit there and hold down my pulse laser and then just alpha strike with that, and then just nail point damage over and over and over again. Or headshots. Like, it does really good with headshots too. I think it even ups like the trajectory speed of certain weapons too, which is crazy. Like, just everything about it's awesome. Yeah. I've got other things to talk about, but I don't want to hog this whole segment. Did you play anything else, Rusty?
Let's see. Well, I mean, talked about the Elden Ring last time, I think. So
Yeah, we have Elden Ringed this podcast out for 2 months.
Yeah, it's
everybody knows it's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good by it. It's all right.
Did you give it a rating? Did you give Shadow of the Erdtree a rating last time?
I don't think I gave it a rating, but having gotten through it and then having had time to reflect upon it, I believe that Elden Ring is probably one of the best DLCs I have ever seen. That's saying a lot. There is enough in that DLC to consider it an entire game.
Oh, easily.
And there is enough change in, just in the available weapons to make that game replayable from the very beginning of that game all the way through the DLC again. Yeah. Now,
that's a lot of game to chew through.
That makes a game that, was about 70-ish hours if you're familiar with it, 100 or plus if you're not. plus another 30 or 40 for the DLC.
I'm 30 hours into the DLC, no guides, almost no guides. I did use a guide for like, what did you miss in the opening area?
Mm.
But I'm 30 hours in the main into Shadow, and I haven't gone all the way right, and I haven't gone all the way left yet.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing the Dragon Mountain stuff is where I need to go right now, and then I need to go to that high forest area is what I'll call it, is where I'm at on the other side of things.
And that's saying something, like going, having those options and playing through it again. So I would say this is really high. Like, on our scale, it's like 4.8, 4.9. Like, there's some blemishes to it. Like, there's a couple places that just didn't feel like it was fleshed out.
I feel like some of the DLC weapons need tune tire, to be honest with you.
Well,
like, you're having a, I think it takes a more complex, it could be this, you just need a more complex understanding of how to build things together to make them really good. Like, those hook blades took me a while to really figure out how that was better. It doesn't do more damage, but it gives you an additional move set to avoid damage and do damage.
Mm-hmm.
With my dex build, like, I really need like a bleed or something. I need some kind of status effect because I hit a lot, And it's a straight damage weapon, right? You can add fire, you can add lightning, you can add all those stuff, but you can't add like a status effect damage.
Right. And I've always been
chicken wing,
a fan of chunky weapons, like something that's going to be, that hits hard, that's got a moderate, speed to it.
Yeah.
I think it's, for me, it's easier for me to strategize with a chunky weapon, something that hits slow in these games, rather than something that's super fast, because I tend to button mash if it's super fast, and if I button mash, I'm not dodging,
Yeah, I've included the chicken wing into my rotation, and it chunks things. It triggers bleed on the first hit.
Yeah, I mean, that's
not everything bleeds in that game, but it's still really good.
Yeah, there's things that need to be I don't want to say balanced more, but it's the chicken wing. It hits. I mean, that's super slow. That's you basically kneel down and then slam, and then slam. That's about how fast it goes. yeah. It's got its thing, but I'm going to go ahead and say 4.8, 4.9, easy. If you own, Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree is an absolute must get. While I'm going to let it sit for a little bit, going through another new game plus with that character, with all those weapons, is, is something that I definitely do want to do, you know, but I just need to let it sit for a bit. I've played a lot of Dark Souls over the last, you know, few months. So, like, I beat Dark Souls 3 times. And Elden Ring 3 times. And Dark Souls 1 once for the first time ever. It's a lot of Dark Souls in a short period of time. So, what I have been doing, though, is, you know, I have picked up Final Fantasy 14 again, because the Dawn Trail expansion came out, and that is this is a new expansion, you know, with the start of a new story arc. So for the last 10 years, Final Fantasy 14 has been going off of this massive story arc that's spanned all of the expansions, you know, previously. And Endwalker, the last expansion, tied up that story arc. And what I wanted to see about Final Fantasy 14 is, A, I'm interested in the story, and B, it's also a game I can play with, you know, with my buddy, you know, and he's been bothering me to play fucking Final Fantasy, so he's getting his chance. You know, Endwalker's main story quests is I don't know, it's fairly long. There's a lot of cutscenes in it, which has an effect on how long this is, because you have to sit through a lot of the cutscenes if you like the story. But one of the biggest things with Dawn Trail, which is the, you know, this expansion, this Dawn Trail ends up with a graphical upgrade, which is subtle. It doesn't change a lot about the game, but there is they went with a different lighting engine, changed some of the character models to have, you know, softer textures, because, you know, shit was a little bit blocky. And they did a little bit more cinematic, you know, camera work, especially in the cutscenes. And just the lighting alone makes this game look fresh. I mean, having proper light and shadows in an MMO is not something that you see very often, especially with, you know, games as old as Final Fantasy 14. And it's
been out like what, 10 years?
Oh God, it's been about 10 years. Yeah, this, you know, I mean, it's been remade once, because A Realm Reborn is basically a relaunch of the original game, which failed horribly. So yeah, it's got a storied history, that's for sure. But yeah, it's been a very interesting ride. Like, leveling, you know, in an MMO seems to be, you know, it's always been kind of like a little bit of a chore, and that's not anything different with Dawn Trail. I mean, you're going to have, you know, periods where you're going to grind a little bit. The difference with Final Fantasy 14, you know, versus, you know, grinding versus, you know, say like any other MMO, really, is it seems like it's more economical with your time. You can do most of your grinding in a couple hours. And then if you choose to grind further, more power to you. But it's most efficient for about 2 hours. Is you have a certain set of things that you can do. You do those, and then it resets the next day. So, you know, if you decide that you want to play another, you know, another game, in fact, the, you know, games director is like, play other games. You know, you can always come back to Final Fantasy 14, play other games, you know, and that's kind of a, you know, not something that you see from a lot of, you know, MMO directors. Most of them want to lock you in and keep you focused on their game. That's not how this works. Let's see. The story for Dawn Trail was a little bit meh. So it follows a completely different character. Most of the previous expansions follows the hero story, your story, right? Your involvement in the world at large, right? And you know, you're the pivotal, you're the pivotal character. You're the hero. With Dawn Trail, it takes a little bit of a pivot, and you're approached by essentially a princess of another nation, and she's seeking help with a rite of succession. You know, she wants to, take over her father's spot as the ruler of this nation, but there's other people that want to, to take that spot. So they're, the father figure, the leader said, here's this, game essentially that you have to compete against each other. And the first person to the end is going to be the ruler. So instead of you being the central figure of the story, it's the princess that you're assisting is the central figure. And you're just kind of like, you're the badass adventurer that, that she hired to help you. And you're using your, she's using your expertise and, saving the world in the past to help her succeed. So it's kind of a different take, and you're not necessarily, you're a secondary character in the story, which, is a bold move for a Final Fantasy game, especially like this. But yeah, it was all right, but it kind of drug on a little bit. There was some really, really slow points where, I won't lie. I probably slept through them.
Wow.
It was a lot of not important shit that was going on, and like, every time you got to a major town, there was probably about an hour's worth of questing that was just running around the town and seeing the fucking sights. And I'm like, nah, dude, just let me fucking kill shit, please. please just let me get into combat at some point. I did end up getting through the entirety of the main story quest. So I'm into what is considered the real portion of the game, which is, the end game is grinding. The end game is, making your character look fun, and cool. For me, it's been crafting and gathering. That's one of the things that I like in Final Fantasy, is it's got a really good crafting and gathering system where you can spend, hours, doing these things and crafting gear for the market board. And it's not just like press button and out comes an item. You actually have like crafting rotations and different situations in the crafting system where that you have to adjust to on the fly. So it's not a bad thing. And I've been spending the last, about week or so working on my crafting and gathering, because I've got one job, one of the classes, one of the combat classes to max level, but there is 8 crafting classes and 3 gathering classes, and I've got all eight crafting classes and 2 of the gathering classes to max level. So I've spent more time actually crafting and gathering than I have actually, going through the story and, shooting shit with my pew-pew lasers. It's fun. Like, if you're into MMOs, like, oh boy, thinking about it right now, if you was to start Final Fantasy 14 from the beginning right now, oh god, you've probably got somewhere in the order of 250 to 300 hours worth of content. Easily.
Without grinding or with grinding?
Well, that is just you picking a class and going through the main story quest. It's actually daunting, you know, to me, for a person who is just starting to play the game to get to where, you know, where I'm at in the story. Because that's just a lot of shit. That's a lot of content. It's good, like, very memorable. There's a lot of very memorable, you know, things that happen in the story, but there's also, like, you know, the expansion stuff is considered kind of like anime filler, you know?
I gotcha.
Short story bits that kind of tie up in a small space between the expansions, and it was really meant to keep people who are currently playing the game, you know, interested in, you know, something. But if you're just like just starting out, man, holy shit, that is a lot of content. Like, there's no way I would recommend you, Justin, to start this game, because I know you would probably, you know, get maybe 10, 15 hours into it and be like, ah, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't know.
Again, I don't have time anymore to invest in a game like that.
Yeah, it's this, you know, the Final Fantasy, I mean, I put it down for a year, right? And I was able to catch up on the story in probably a day. But if you were just starting out, it's like, it's a pretty daunting task. Like, that's a lot of content. There is story skips, and you can purchase those, you know, and it does save you like hundreds of hours if you do, do a story skip. But you also kind of like lose all of the context for your character. You know, you get a little video of like what your character skipped, the high points, you know, but that does not instill your character as your character. It leaves something to be desired. Like, look, I'm looking at my character, you know, when I look at my character, I can remember my character going through a lot of this shit. Whereas a story skip, you have none of that context. So it's unique. In a way, Final Fantasy 14 is very unique because you're very attached to your character. But it's also, you know, it's also a Final Fantasy game. It depends on how you like, you know, RPGs and shit like that, especially MMOs. That's what I've been doing with most of my time. And this being kind of like the summer lull, you know, my goal was to get through the story, get through to a point where I can play with my buddy, you know, craft and gather a little bit, and then, you know, be able to, you know, like the game director asked, play other games. So I do plan on getting through Bloodborne at some point. But this has been my focus for the last 2 weeks. So I don't know. I mean, I'm also kind of looking forward to a couple games too. Like, another game that's, you know, that sucks me in and basically eats my soul is Satisfactory. And that is eventually going to be coming out in 1.0 soon.
Yeah, I want to say it's September.
Yeah. And as soon as that does, I'm going to play that game because, man, yeah, Satisfactory is...
Satisfactory?
Satisfactory. Very satisfactory.
Yeah, there's games coming out in 1.0. So on July 25th, 7 Days to Die comes to console at 1.0 and comes to PC at 1.0. It still doesn't have Bandits. There is an experimental build on PC that has the 1.0 build that they're updating like every day and then providing notes if you want to update your game on how to do it and save your progress. Since it's 2 weeks away, or less than 2 weeks away at this point, I don't know if I should continue playing or not, but I've got some initial thoughts on 1.0 and what it does to the game. It's harder. I guess there'd been some, like, playing on normal mode, people had been cranking up the difficulty of the Blood Moons because the early hordes weren't hard enough. They're definitely hard enough. I think I'd been showing you guys through some video clips I'd been sharing to you guys of fails, right? I did post a fail video. I did a Navi's Gain map. Done that map a lot. They've added a lot of POIs, but I did want to try something different. So I got 30 hours into Navi's Gain, tried it with all the things that I knew from previous builds, and that worked pretty okay. Did my horde base that was basically just a bunch of barbed wire and spikes with a rifle build, and that was okay. But I decided to try some things, newer things, so I went looking through videos, different builds that people buy. There's a guy that I can't remember his name off. I wish I could give him credit, but there's a guy that has like all sorts of different hordes based styles, right? And I'd created it initially for night one, and I posted this this fail video, and he had suggested creating like a tunnel with holes in the bottom of the floor so that zombies fall through. The problem is the zombies run. So if you sprint, you can actually skip over the holes. And of course, the zombies do the same thing. And then because my wedges for the sides of the tunnel were too wide or too much of an incline, they basically just ran on all fours at me over all the holes and then just came and like tackled me. And eventually I failed that night. That was my day 7 fail on the pregen, on a, not a pregen, on a random gen that I'd made. And so I wanted to – I'm going to have to rebuild that base again, but I did upgrade it since then. I didn't post a video of this, but I did go through and create a version of that with a different angle of concrete, which meant that I had to tear down my cobblestone with a stone axe. So like a full – probably 30 minutes of work in-game, like in real time, of breaking down my bridge. I didn't break down the holes in the floor yet because I wanted to try it out again and see if it worked, if I had the right angle on the sides. Still didn't quite work, but I did add one huge component to it. So I made the sides out of concrete because I had upgraded by day 21, I'd upgraded to concrete. So I did survive the day 14 horde just because I had more ammo. It was still basically just fighting zombies in a hallway. And killing all of them with zero traps. And then I upgraded with electric fences. And holy shit, that is effective. Did fuck up one thing with electric fences is I did not. I thought the post being off the ground would be enough. Apparently the cop zombies were spitting and blew up my electric fences. So for the last 10 minutes of the horde night, I was basically fighting everything at my face. But still survived. And now I have the lessons that I need to cover up those posts so that I can make sure they don't get hit. But they throw the kitchen sink at you on every horde night right now. Like I got day 21, I had demoed zombies, so you probably don't remember this, but they used to have a button on their chest. And if you hit that button, they explode and they do a lot of block damage. They kind of tear your base down. They move the button to their top left shoulder, which actually means if you miss a headshot wrong, you can actually hit the button. Thankfully though, the electric fence like shocks them for a good 3 seconds. I actually used my bow for most of night 21. They throw fucking hellhounds at you now. I don't know if that was even a thing the last time you were playing. They're like huge fucking dogs. I got a video of one. And they are intimidating as fuck. And then they throw, the demo zombies and the cop zombies, and the cop zombies were trying to tear apart my base from the outside while I was trying to fight everything. So I'm going to have to get some additional I don't know, some additional defenses. I need a couple of like robo turrets up top to kind of help thin numbers as they come towards me. But I've got a scientist build, which means I get a stun baton, and then I added agility into it, so I had bow and pistol skills too. Stun baton's really fucking fun. Like, you electrocute things when you crit with it, and you don't have to have a headshot. But it also, I've got a stun repulsor mod, so when I hit something, it like shoots back like 5 feet and can knock zombies over. The zombie I just launched across the room will also knock other zombies over, which is really fun. They added these, like, I want to say they've added like 30 new zombie types, right? The whole progression system has been reworked quite a bit too. So it's a mix of things. You do quests for the trader to help you get some XP and to get rewards. The trader doesn't buy things for as much money now, so you can't just like automatically shoot yourself way up in the tech tree too early. The loop though is loot POIs, come back and craft shit at night, basically, right? Maybe upgrade your base, upgrade all your, you know, get your food going, maybe run your forge, etc. Like, I've got a coffee shop, the attic that I turned into my initial base because it was really close to the trader. And then I went across the street. There's a diner right next to my coffee shop. And on the roof of that diner now, I've got a farm going on the roof along with these things called dew collectors. So used to, you'd craft a long time ago, you'd use sand to craft. You know, mason jars, then you go to a lake and fill it up with water. Kind of the way the progression goes on your water is you create a dew collector, which does, it costs basic materials, a lot of basic materials, but stuff you can get at any point in the game. And over the course of time, it collects water for you. And then it's got upgrades for that device, so you can now mod it to where it collects more. So like eventually you can get a water filter for it, so it just gives you clean water right off the bat. Mine currently gives me 6 water about every 20 minutes, which is quite a bit. And then I put, cause it's got an upgrade on it. And then I've got like 4 unupgraded ones on that roof. So I always have enough water to make my glue, which you need for duct tape. And then also so I can just make all the different foods and things. The buffs are really meaningful now. I don't know, just the way that the game works is really addictive. The loop is really addictive. And then, you know, once you get closer to that day 7 horde, right, then like that last day and a half is what you use to start upgrading your base and work on that. You still get a fuckload of XP from building. So if you have somebody in your party that wants to craft, like, that's where I get a lot of my XP, honestly. Like, the quests do a pretty good job, but that does a really good job. It also has like different tiers of objectives, like, you know, kill so many zombies or mine so many things or make this one type of, you know, you made bicycles. So now you've got like another 2000 XP that you can add to yourself, right? So all these little challenges kind of like peppered in to kind of help with your progression. But like essentially what you do is you use the skill books to unlock specific skills and also unlock specific tiers of things that you can craft. You get legendary components to create like a tier 6 level of something, which I thought I needed to save that, but I'm getting enough of those to create additional things. So like with this pistol build, I was able to get enough components to create a level 6 regular, you know, so essentially like a 9mm. And that was a huge upgrade for me by my day 21 horde. Like that 9mm like saved my bacon. I did not have to go through 1,000 rounds. I went through about 400 rounds between that and then my bow. I went through about 100 rounds with my bow. But like, you essentially just pick like 2 trees you want to go through and pick the skills you want from those 2 trees, and then you'll get more books. So like, since I'm doing pistols, I find more pistol books, which the skill goes from 1 to 100. And each of those books give me crafting recipes. Like, it could be mod recipes. It could be just upping my overall damage or my reload speed, the amount of stamina it takes for me to aim it, etc. So like, I've got a level 6 pistol with like a barrel mod on it, which gives it like, I guess, better penetration or something. And then, you know, like a red dot sight on it and a flashlight and more damage to animals, which helps with all the fucking hellhounds, etc. So like, at this point in the game, like, it's really good. I don't know what else they're going to tune before they release it here in 2 weeks. But again, with it coming out so soon, I've decided I was going to table it for a minute. and just wait, because I don't want to get to like day 42 on that game and then it resets all my progress. So like right now I'm on day 21 on one save and then like day 30 on the other save. And I was like, yeah, I'm just going to stop. Right. And just wait till that releases. I've got a good understanding what's going on here. It's a fun game. I can easily get to that level again. And then I did something that I'd never do, which is get a Japanese-ass Japanese game.
I noticed you were playing a Japanese-ass Japanese game.
Shin Megami Tensei V Vengeance.
Wow.
I don't remember offhand what the relation is to the Persona series, but it starts off similar to Persona and then immediately deviates. It's definitely more my type of game. I was talking to Musum, who does Picking Up the Pixels Right and Video Game Club. And I was like, okay, I want to try a Japanesey game. And my issue with Persona is there's way too much do menial things before I get to fighting the endless dungeon. And some people really like the story in Persona 3. It's a high school simulator with some combat, right? Shin Megami Tensei is kind of the inverse of that. So I've played like 10 hours maybe so far. And the very beginning of the game, I start off in high school. I talk to a handful of people. Immediately, I go and investigate. There's a murder. Everybody's stuck on the train. You know, they can't use the train. And then you go hunting to find your buddy who like kind of ran off to see what's going on. You go to a sewer. Go into the sewer or then transported into Demon World. And that's where I've been for 10 hours. the high school simulator was about 10 minutes. Okay. This has been all the weirdest parts of Japanese JRPGs. But I actually like it. It took a minute for me to really kind of get the hang of it. I've never really played. I played Nocturne a billion years ago with Musum back when we were basically barely out of high school. So I don't remember much about how these games play out, but you go into Demon World, right? And immediately it's just a turn-based RPG. There is some story, right, that kind of helps it going, but it is very much a meat and potatoes old school Final Fantasy game. Like it is kind of like a, I'll explain. So you go up and, you know, you start off with a couple of demons and then as you progress, you talk to, say you get into combat, right? You'll be traveling the open map. You swing your sword, that initiates combat, or you run into it and they get combat. Basically, whoever starts combat first gets the initiative on the start. And then you have the option of talking to the demon. And depending on the moon phase, again, this is a weird mechanic, you have a different chance of recruiting them. So you can avoid combat altogether by talking to a demon. You could convince them to leave the combat altogether. You could convince them to give you an item based on your choices, or you could convince them to join your team. They might want different things, right? They might want some money, some of your magic gauge, some of your health, or you might beat them in arm wrestling, which is one of the ones that I did. Very random. I guess it's not random, but it feels kind of random on what each one of them wants, right? And so you enter a pact and they join your team. And as you level up, you get the option of fusing them together with other demons. So you could fuse them with ones in your group. You could spend money to fuse them with one that you have seen to create a new one. And that's kind of how they all level up to a specific point, and then they don't really go further except for their stats. So as they're leveling up, they're gaining new skills. And then you can fuse them together to make more powerful versions or different versions or not even versions, like completely different ones, right? Some of the designs like super waifu, some of the designs are like super fucking cool. Not so much like, for example, I've got a fucking mermaid in my party. She's waifu as fuck. She is pretty good at what she does, but she is waifu as fuck. But I'm going to fuse her together to make like a super nymph or something like that later on as I hit a higher level. But the good part of her is that she does like ice damage, and she does ice damage in an AoE, and I don't have very much AoE at like level 15. So she's really good for AoE, or if it's a single target like a boss, instead of hitting three targets six random times on a crit, It does single target damage 3 times with the potential crit. So, like, that part is really good. She also, because I created her from the, you know, fairy or whatever the fuck I had before, I brought healing abilities on her. And that's the other thing. You can go through and customize each of the characters by adding abilities from different demons to them. So you can kind of kit out each one of them to be the most effective version of themselves. But the game loop is essentially, oh, I'm not high enough level. Go kill things. They, like, respawn really quick. Like, every time you hit a save point, like, the whole world respawns, kind of like Elden Ring, right? Or it's Dark Souls. You can go through and grind and get your guys a little bit higher level up, or you can figure out, is that one of the ones that I want to take with me and fuse with something else? Like, you could do that, too. You don't have, like, once you've captured one, like, that's enough for you to have the memory of that thing so that you can fuse it later. So you don't necessarily need to go capture it again if you need it for a different build for a different character. But essentially, it plays out as a mix between Disciples 2 and Final Fantasy. And what I mean by that is you're building these creatures that you collect into stronger versions, right? And like Disciples, you would kind of like morph your, you know, your pawns essentially, right? Your characters on your team into stronger versions of that. There's not a lot of bullshit dialogue, and I like that. Like, there's just enough. And the difficulty tuning is pretty good. I had my first real boss fight last night before I went to bed. It's a Hydra. It did really take me thinking about, I thought I was going to lose, and I just somehow snatched victory from the jaws of defeat at the last minute. Should have recorded it. But, yeah, you got to figure out the enemy's weakness. You got to figure out how to mitigate the damage, right? And there's a whole turn system where if you crit, you get another half turn. And so if you crit every other turn, essentially you get an extra turn, right? And there's a limit to that. Like, at a certain point, you don't get any more extra turns. But you can use that to really, like, burst down something or to create enough space on your turn order to give yourself a heal, like, every other turn. If you know you can crit or create a weakness attack towards something, you can space your characters in your roster out to be every other one that have the thing that crits something to create that space, so that the in-between characters can provide support abilities for your party, which is an interesting concept. I don't know. Overall, like, I'm actually having fun with it. That's what I'd have been doing if we weren't podcasting this morning, either that or mowing the lawn. It is a Switch game that they put on PC. It is a very clean-looking game. What I mean by that is it's not overly detailed on the models, but the art style is very anime. And, like, you just can't see pixels, I guess is what I'm saying. It's, like, low detail, but you can't see pixels. Everything's okay. Really flashy. Everything's super clean. It runs at a stupid FPS on my machine. And also, it should be noted that there's, like, two completely pretty different ways to play the game. So, at the very beginning of the game, you can do the Vengeance version of the game, or you can do the, like, Creation version of the game, which is, I decided to go with the base version of the game, and apparently it takes, like, 50 or 60 hours to beat. So, if I continue to have fun with this, then I will go back and play the other version of the game, which is a decision you make literally 5 minutes into the game, to kind of change it to the second storyline path of the game. But if you're into waifu bullshit, which I'm not, but also into really good turn, it's a really good turn-based game. If you've been like just like me, who's a guy who's early 40s that played a lot of Final Fantasy growing up, and Final Fantasy has not been the Final Fantasy you grew up with, you know, for 15 years, since at least 10, this is a better version of that. It's a better version of that term. I actually think it flows better because there's not a lot of downtime between actually playing the fucking game. There's a whole lot of playing the fucking game, and that's what I like about it. You're always playing the game. It's grindy, but it's interesting to kind of figure out how things mismatch together. There's a whole lot of build experimentation as I'm going through and like killing creatures and leveling up. A whole bunch of little side quests to do. Again, and then I won't get into who it is, but like everybody calls your character Young Man, which is kind of funny. Young Man.
Young Man.
you know, I don't know what the word is for it. Androgynous character. And the fact that he keeps calling him a young man is kind of hilarious. You look like I don't know. It's just, I still think with all the anime waifu bullshit, like it's actually really fun. So I don't fucking care about that. And the demon design is actually really fucking cool. So like most of it, the little cat demons I had were stupid. They're getting morphed out pretty soon. But that mermaid looks kind of stupid. But the ice demon I have looks like really fucking rad. The tank demon I have looks really fucking rad. The weird Skeletor crit tank dude I have looks really fucking cool. Like the art design's pretty neat and just doesn't really look like anything else I'm used to. So maybe it does if you watch a lot of anime. Me, who watches very little anime, am able to tolerate this a lot because it's a game ass game, and I appreciate that a lot. Shimagama Tensei. Pretty cool so far.
Nice. That's high praise from somebody who does not play anything, you know, super anime-ish. So
I'm gonna keep playing it. Yeah.
That is a thing.
Should we take a break?
I believe so.
I mean, yeah.
All right, we'll be back. And we're back.
Mm-hmm.
It is a. It is a weird. Summer is weird for news, right? Like
it is,
and releases and things like that. We're trying to figure out what to play, so that's kind of where all the replays come in. So the Steam sale is. That's where we end up picking up some stuff and kind of going through maybe greatest hits of things that were good before. It's just weird. Like you'd think game companies would want to release something in the summer that was really big. Well, I guess they really Shadow the Erdtree. But I mean, you think of like all the college people, right? Like they're off in the summer. If you're a teacher, you're off in the summer. If you're, I don't know, maybe the target demographic now is dads, and dads are now busy in the summer. So, because you're doing things to your kids.
Yeah, but they've always released like this, though. Like it's not, that's not anything new.
Well, speaking of things that, are releasing this summer. Something that's funny is Amazon Prime Gaming is releasing Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. Because, you know, there was only like 200 concurrent players on that game last time I checked.
And that's like not far. That's not long after it was released. Like
it's released in March. Died
quick.
Yeah, it died super quick. I think it was released by Rocksteady. It's just nobody had interest in a Destiny style Rocksteady game.
Yeah, and
they shouldn't have been most multiplayer focused. I think it would have done a lot better if it wasn't.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe those games are there's something going on. Like there is a change in the flavor of games, and that just came out. Probably came out a couple of years too late.
What it is the market is saturated with essentially
games as a service.
Games as a service, they're saturated with that. So like, and there's only a couple that are really worth your time, right? It's kind of like this, right? Like you could be a band, right? And you could be the best rock band in the world, but because that market is really saturated, it's really hard to break out, right? Or you can be an artist that is really unique and original and doesn't really fit into a genre and be a lot more successful with a smaller audience because nobody sounds like you, right? And the same thing I think goes for games. Like, you want the flavor of the last few years has been games as a service. And there's only a few that have survived continuously. That's Destiny, which has had its ups and downs, right? You've got Apex Legends, which has had some ups and downs. You had PUBG that was popular for a while. I don't know how many people play that. But like, there's like 10 games in that genre that are big. And 400 games that nobody knows what the fuck they are. And people that play that kind of thing basically just play that game. It's kind of like breaking into the first person, competitive first person shooter market, which a lot of those are, but like Call of Duty, right?
Mm.
People just play Call of Duty or they play Battlefield. And all the stuff in between, like nobody hears of. Like they're little indie releases that don't break out. There's that one World War II shooter that a lot of people play, and I can't remember the name of it, right? But that's on Steam that people have been playing for a while that is like 40 versus 40 that you inch through the trenches at each other. And like people are really hardcore about that. But very specific markets for that kind of stuff. And if you're forcing people to pick the one game they're used to versus your new game, then pick the one that's been kind of refined into what they want to play. Now, that's not really the type of gamers we are. We play a lot of single player games. A lot. And so that's where I think there's a big chunk of people that just play that kind of stuff and shoot through single player games. And like Baldur's Gate 3 proved last year, you don't have to be a games of the service to be wildly successful.
Right.
And they were wildly successful. Something else in that vein too, Terraria, right? Terraria is supposed to have had their final update like 2 years ago. Well, they're in their next final update. Terraria has 32 million people playing on PC, and 58 million people have played that game over the course of its lifetime. It's on Android as well as on console, right? You can get it on every console system. You can get it on PC. You can get it on iOS, probably iOS at this point. I don't even know, but they just made a post that 58 million people play Terraria. There's an optional multiplayer in that game. There's a lot you can do with that game. It's a stupid little pixel art game. You can create these crazy weapons and have these crazy boss battles. It is not a high-budget game, but it's really fun. And I've been playing Terraria off and on for like 11 years. It's one of the highest-selling games over several different Mario Brothers titles, created with a significantly smaller budget and a significantly smaller team, right? Terraria is awesome. It's kind of like a Hall of Fame game for me. Like it's great.
You can play it on iOS.
Yeah.
I just checked.
Oh. Yeah, they're constantly updating. They're on 1.4.5 now. But yeah, you could play whatever they've got in the newest update, which is probably a lot, right? Because Realogic has just made gangbusters on that game. They don't have a real reason to stop. Telltale kind of came back out. There were some more screenshots of The Wolf Among Us 2 that were posted on their Twitter the other day. Their Twitter, like literally yesterday, they posted some screenshots of The Wolf Among Us 2, which I'm interested in that. But like the people that are interested in that are people our age, because the first one came out like in the Xbox 360 days or something, right?
Right. It's been a long time.
Right. So, I mean, we shall see when that comes out. That's something that we want to play. Something else that's of real big note, and this affects everybody on this cast and a lot of people that listen to us. Game Pass increased the subscription price increase. And I think part of that is they're doing day one Call of Duty right now, which I don't give a fuck about.
You don't, but other people do.
I'd say there are plenty of people out there.
But yeah, the price goes up on September 12th. So I pay for Ultimate, which is essentially $17 a month, right? So it's going from $16.99 to $19.99 to get Ultimate, which includes the day one service. At this point, with it going up that, it's $3, but like looking at my spending of what I do versus when I'm on there versus when I'm not. Right now, I'm not really on there. I might turn mine off and turn mine back on depending on what I'm doing at this point, because it's going up to $20 a month. It's just high enough that at this point I'm like, okay, well, this, if I haven't played it for a month, I spent money I shouldn't have spent. Fortunately, if you already have a year's worth of Game Pass, such as our friend Jason here,
yeah,
it won't affect you until you re-up. But $240 a year is a lot of money.
And even then, I'm kind of locked in at Game Pass Ultimate unless I want to go through a bunch of shit with Microsoft to change that fact. So that's only going up $1 a month.
Yeah, and I think the cost of it this year to get a year's worth was $200, right? Pretty sure it was that's what it was, wasn't it, Rusty?
About, yeah.
So $40 a year. Like, again, like that's the, if you play three or four full price games on there a year, like it's still worth it, but like it is getting to a point where they're kind of, I don't know, making it in a tier that's kind of inaccessible. Now, things that are interesting about that, like there's a full price game coming out soon that I'm going to try out called Flintlock Siege of Dawn. Hopefully it's not a shitbox game. But like that comes out, I want to say that you've got Stalker coming out on there. Star Wars, which Star Wars is that?
Outlaw,
I think you can play that on there. And I'm not sure if Space Marine is going to be on there or not. But I'm pretty sure you can get the Star Wars game on it because of the... No, I don't think you can. They have... Is it... They have a partnership with Ubi, right? No, it's not. It's EA. That's EA. Yeah, so Star Wars isn't going to be on there. But, like, we did play Hellblade recently on there. I can't remember what else we played on there. I want to say I've played a few games on there. I want to say three or four this year so far. Not real good for modding games. It is really difficult to mod games on there. But, Frostpunk. Frostpunk is the other one that's going to be on there. Yeah, like Frostpunk.
Certain games are. But there are certain games that's fairly easy. Like, it's fairly easy to mod MechWarrior 5 on it. Right? It's fairly easy to mod Battletech. It's fairly easy to... Can't remember what else I've modded off of there. Oh, Starfield. I modded Starfield off of it.
Yeah, I did too. There were some hoops you have to jump through, though.
Yeah. But they weren't extremely difficult hoops. Not for anybody who has any experience modding, anyway.
They're not one-button-click mods. Like, there is a little bit of hinkiness to it.
There's still some decent titles that's on there, though.
Yep. There absolutely is.
Ugh. But yeah, I've got one more story, but it kind of ties into another one. I know there's a big story that you're wanting to talk about, Jason.
There is. So... 2 days ago, PC Mag and a couple other sites spoke with the Fallout London team, and we got some confirmation that it will be coming soon. It's basically in progress with Q&A over at GOG. So once GOG completes their Q&A on the mod, it'll get a go live. Don't quite know when that'll be yet, but because they've not committed to a hard date yet, but we'll see where we get. Hopefully it's soon. The other big part to the story is they've decided that the next gen update is still fundamentally broken enough, even after the big patch Bethesda did to it, that they've decided not to spend more time trying to develop for it, and the mod will, when you download it from GOG, will now include an automatic downgrader to downgrade your Fallout 4 install to the most recent stable version of the game prior to the next gen release.
Okay. Yeah, it's because that update broke so many things, and it was supposed to be good, but...
Yeah, like VATS still doesn't completely work in it.
Wait, what? VATS doesn't work in the...
It doesn't work right.
Well, that's awesome. You know, just a core element of the game. Just doesn't work. Amazing. Yeah.
It's just kind of one of those Bethesda things. Seems like there's a dozen issues with every patch. Or with every update that they end up spending months patching.
Yeah.
But at least they've made the decision we're not going to have to wait a whole lot longer for it. I'm extremely happy about that. So hopefully we get to get our hands on it soon.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. It was one thing that I saw. I've been kind of like eyeballing this, this game, and I'm like, I don't know if this is something that this feels real shitty. Let me see if I can find it. God damn it! I just had it up. There it is. There's a game that's that had come out just recently, within the last couple weeks or so, of called The First Descendant.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, so if you wanted an easy description of what The First Descendant is, if you take Destiny and Warframe and slap them together, and they had a bastardized test tube child, that's probably what you would get from The First Descendant. It's made by a Korean developer that is very microtransaction heavy in their games, and they are not shy about it, like to the point where each individual character that you can get, and there's a lot of them that you can unlock, if you want to like dye their armor, it costs real money. And that die is only for that character that time. And if you wanted to change that die, you buy it again. And you don't get to reuse it. It's just like pay for a paint job, you know? And it's super, super microtransaction heavy in that way. Like, you know, not even great. The action is kind of Warframe-y. If you watch some of the videos, it might look interesting, but it's super grindy. The audio isn't super awesome.
It's a South Korean game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Korean game. And it looks like it was built for mobile, you know, but you know, and available on PC. It's getting a lot of flack right now because the skill icons and shit like that for, you know, that they used in the game look almost identical to Destiny. Like, to the point where side-by-side comparisons have been made and they're only marginally different.
Enough to not get hit with a copyright strike.
Just barely different, if at all. Like, even some of the symbols are used for the same kind of buff or, thing as in Destiny. It's kind of crazy. So there's a lot of talk about, you know, what is inspired by and what is actually, like, you know, original content. So it is a game, and yeah, you can probably go out there and play it if you want, and there's people who are having fun with it, but I've already done my time in Warframe. There is no way you're gonna get me to fucking play this game. No matter how flashy it might look. I mean, for
those really big games, I've been wanting to try out Once Human, if one of you guys wants to try that out with me at some point.
Once Human?
Yeah. It just came out.
I've heard of it. Yeah, I saw a thing about Once Human, but I never really looked into it. I've been kind of busy over the last couple of weeks, so kind of focused on things.
Yeah, it's kind of like an MMO in that you need to have people to do a lot of this stuff. Like, single player is kind of hard, is what it seems like.
Oh yeah. Boy. An MMO. I don't know if I want to do another MMO.
I've backburned it because it just got released. It's free to play.
Ah,
it was the only one of the free to plays that looked interesting enough for me. But it kind of has a whole, like, look, kind of a Cthulhu-esque aesthetic. I don't know. Hmm. Like, the monster design is, like, you know, you got some zombie-esque kind of stuff, but there's a whole lot of non-zombie stuff in it. And it kind of gear you towards, like, boss fights at the end of dungeons and stuff like that. But at the same time, you build a base.
Hmm. Okay.
But yeah, it's pretty fucking weird. It just came out, I want to say, this week? It came out, yeah, Tuesday. I've been looking at it, and I was like, maybe. But then, you know, I got sucked into my own 7 Days to Die and Shin Megami Tensei. That was the most interesting thing, aside from what I'm already playing. But speaking of that, I'm talking about new releases. I had a really good review of Rogue Trader last year, you know, Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader. Really good turn-based game, basically like Baldur's Gate Warhammer version, and pretty fucking good. Like, if Baldur's Gate's a 4.9 as one of the best, this is like a 4.5. It's a really solid CRPG. Void Shadows DLC is coming out September 24th. May give me another reason to go back into it. Don't remember the price on it, but yeah, I guess I can look. No, I don't want that video to play in the background. But anyways, yeah, it's, I want to say $20-ish. I don't know. Shall see. But it's the kind of game where if it's a meaningful DLC, it'll come out like an expansion, so to speak. Other things, though, like I said, the notable releases for this month potentially is Flintlock Siege of Dawn, which is kind of like a Souls-style game with completely different aesthetics. Just look it up. Angry Foot just came out, which is kind of like first-person Hotline Miami is the best description I've seen of it. Right? There's gunplay, but there's also a lot of, you know, chest-kicking.
Angry Feet?
Yeah. You can get upgrades to your sneakers. What else? Next year, we got the Star Wars Outlaws coming out August 30th. That'll be interesting. I still don't know how I feel about it. Black Myth Wukong comes out on August 20th. September is kind of our big month for games. We got Stalker 2 coming out September 5th, which will be on Game Pass. Space Marine 2 comes out on September 9th. The OG Dead Rising Remake Remaster coming out September 18th. Frostpunk 2 coming out September 20th. No longer here in 2 weeks. Sad face. And let's see.
October is pretty much up in the air, and everything else after that is up in the air, really. Diablo Vessel of Hatred DLC is coming out in October.
I am super over Diablo right now.
Yeah. So, I think you might, I might give Once Human a try. I don't know if I'm going to get to it this weekend because I want to play some more Shimigami Tensei. But we'll see. Got a whole bunch of picture editing to do the next several days, so I may just keep my staple games to keep me occupied when I need a break and not try something completely new that'll suck up all my time while I've got, you know, we've got to go through 1,500 or 2,000 photos. But yeah, that was that's a lot of news.
That is.
And you've got things you should play, right? You've got things we know that you should play. We know that you should play Final Fantasy. We know that you should play Shimigami Tensei 5. We know that you should play Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty if you haven't tried it yet. We know that you should play 7 Days to Die 1.0, though. If you haven't started it yet, it comes out on the 25th. Just wait. The 1.0 update's pretty significant. Just for even just the character models looking way better and everything being voiced and everything being laid out a lot clearer. Everything about that's better right now. That game's fun. MechWarrior 5 with the YAML update. That game is way better with mods. Like, it goes from being a pretty okay grindy game to being a really good grindy game with YAML. I think that's all I got.
All right.
Jason. All right, guys. Well, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Find our YouTube channel, youtube.com/realtiltcast. We're working on something new, so stay tuned there. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast. We've got the Video Game Club and TVGP.TV. They do fantastic things and also play Japanese games. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.